be a temporary
Yes, sir.
Outside, participation in a sense.
Wasn't there a concern at one time that we couldn't have multiple land banks?
That is a concern, but there is, I mean, I know that Tracy says, oh, yeah, you can, and it's no problem, but it is a problem. They're not, they don't jump on doing it all that easy, so. But they may, I mean, we're looking at, I've had three conversations, actually four conversations with the mayor. So the mayor at the very beginning was like lukewarm, but now he's much more acceptable to it. I think if it depends on how we decide the makeup looks of it, I mean, he wants to protect the city's land bank, but obviously, I would be the same way. And I don't think we have a big problem with him trying to, I mean, if we have seven members, if they have two, who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that he would be more acceptable to doing that now after the last conversations I've had with him. Like I said, I've had four conversations with him. And so we just have to, I really want to make sure that we understand the positives and the negatives of each move. Or can we do, can we do a dual move? And can we do both? And would that make sense?
So I think that this, as you've mentioned, it's unclear whether we actually would get approved, and I think it's interesting to submit the application to see if we would get approved, because I think that does make a difference. My thing with the city and why I feel so strongly about partnering with the city is that the city's going to have all the properties in the city,
mm-hmm.
and so if I want to help my constituents, we need to partner with the city. And if I felt the city was doing everything that they could do to get people in homes, I probably wouldn't be as concerned. But I am concerned. I am concerned about my constituents. I'm concerned about the city putting properties back on, taking properties out of the land bank. I realize that there's some problematic issues with the specific properties that the city's not moving forward with. But they've got three properties. They're now in the second round of opening it up for applications. They've been doing this for 4 years, Tim.
Yep.
Remember when we first were on the Kingston Land Trust Board?
And
we were talking about this with Mayor Noble. So I know the city is trying. I know that they've taken steps in the right direction. I just want to get my constituents in homes,
mm-hmm.
and that's the most important thing for me. In terms of whether we can use the LDC, I think Chairman Donaldson hit it right on the head. It's the difference that, in my view, makes an LDC in the form similar to what we've had for Golden Hill, not attractive to me, is that that was not set up with the idea of citizen participation in the same way. I think if we were going to do an LDC that really was to transact, residential single-family homes, it would probably look, the membership would look a lot more like the housing task force that we did at the beginning of last year. So I'm open to, changes that we could make to LDC membership. However, I believe that we would simply be replicating a land bank, and if that's what we need to do in order to, if we are not allowed to move forward with something, if the mayor of Kingston does not want to move forward with us, then I think that this is, I wouldn't rule it out. But I think this is an important first step, but I'm fine with postponing it.
Could I get some feedback from you, Marilyn, or do you, John Faraday?
Sure. So, I'll say that we, Dennis and I, have been in almost a bi-weekly dialogue with Mike Gilliard, who's the director of the Land Bank, since we started these conversations over a year ago. And I concur with what's been said here about both aims and constraints. We've come to, I think, although not 100% philosophically aligned with how Mike Gilliard sees the world, respect his competence and ability, and I think he's been really slogging to try to get that organization moving in a good way, and has just run into a lot of issues with specifically the foreclosure process in the city, and whether the right properties were taken in the first place, and the time frames that they do the foreclosure in, and so my my goal, and I think we have some time later this week scheduled to talk about this some more, is to first really talk about the aims and what we want to accomplish, and to suggest that we kind of pursue a dual-track approach of piloting the LDC approach this year and kind of working through what that could look like while we work on the land bank, whether it's expansion or application. I just want to make sure that we don't take responsibility for issues in the city that we don't have the actual ability to solve. And so that's my only real caution about how we proceed, is making sure that we don't end up, actually or appearing to have responsibility for something that we can't work through. And so I think there's a lot to discuss around what that structure would look like. But totally agree with you on the aims.
Yeah, so I just want to add that there's a lot of those particular questions like you just raised that I want to know a little bit more about. You know, are there particular things, because the city of Kingston is a city, you know, are there things that restrain them from doing anything different than a county land bank would do? I mean, I don't know those things. We haven't gotten those answers. I know we have a meeting scheduled with the exec later this week, and I know that Tracy is going to spend some time gathering some information to, you know, come back to the caucus with a little bit more detail and, you know, a lot more research on what the land bank means and the differences between an LDC and a land bank, and if there are restrictions in the LDC or restrictions in the land bank that, you know, might work well together if they are in parallel, or do we do one or the other, or do we create a new LDC specifically for this, you know, because, you know, my recollection of the previous LDC was that it was specifically for Golden Hill, right, when we did that one. So if we're going to, you know.
Well, actually, our mindset was for Golden Hill, but it wasn't specifically done for Golden Hill because we can actually operate beyond that.
I think our one of the things that we discussed were the appointment of the people on the board who, you know, represented the area, right? So we wanted to make sure that happened, right? So, again, you know, to me, you know, there's a lot of questions and there's a lot of information that we need before we even consider voting on this. So I think that this is a good thing. We're going to postpone it for a month, and we'll have a few more weeks to get that information and make an informed decision, you know, next month or the month after, even, depending, right?
Now, if I'm incorrect here, would the LDC, in a sense, has the ability to, it seems, has the ability to operate quicker in that, in other words, with the land bank, the county would have to take the property, whatever it is, and hand it right over to the land bank, and then the land bank would work it. Where an LDC could take the properties off if we shift them into the LDC. And wouldn't that give it it does have a slight quicker thing about it, maybe. I'm not sure. What do you think, Dennis?
What I would say is that there are pros and cons to both. And I think the idea of looking at a dual track to see where we are, because the land bank is not a given here. The land bank is absolutely positively not a given. One is the fact that if you're going to talk about creating your own land bank outside the city, then you need approval at the state level. And we have reached out to the state, and the state is less than enthusiastic about having two land banks in the same county, primarily because there's a limited number of land banks that are available in legislation that they can hand out. So they have strongly urged that we should not pursue essentially a county land bank separate and apart from a city land bank.
You know, that's one question that I want to get answered, because I've heard that multiple times from...
They didn't say you can't.
Yeah,
you
but said, what I'm saying is that Tracy says the opposite. They said there's no restrictions and there's no reason why you couldn't.
She's right. She's absolutely correct that there are no restrictions with respect to the ability to apply.
Right.
However, What they have said to us is we've only had so many to give out, and we're not inclined to essentially create two land banks in a single county. That's what they've said. And they've said that directly. That doesn't mean you can't apply. It doesn't mean that they won't approve it. It just that's what they've said. And the other thing I would say is that the land bank in the city of Kingston is its own entity. Right? So the mayor has appointment powers, but
that's it.
The board members may or may not want to join us, or us to join them. So just be aware of that. So that's the nuts and bolts between the land bank. Once you get a land bank, then I think the advantages of a land bank is that they tend to attract funding, whereas a development corporation may or may not attract funding. But the disadvantages of a land bank are that they don't ask you what properties they want. They tell you what properties they're taking. So in many instances, what ends up happening is that the land bank can take the properties that you may make the most money on selling at your auctions and use that. Now, that's, you know, we've identified, this last auction, we identified about 15 properties that were residential properties that were available that would make an opportunity for housing. And looking at those were probably one of the largest returns on investment that the county or taxes that were owed versus the payments that were made to the county. So you actually made money on those properties, and you actually make money on those sales. The other thing I think you need to think about is that from a standpoint of policy, I mean, the legislature, if you're going to surplus lands, essentially from the county pulls the lands, and they run through the legislative process, and they're surplus to the development corporation, that surplus can have any policy that the legislature decides in terms of how it's surplus to the development corporation.
On those particular parcels.
On those particular parcels. So you have a lot more control than essentially handing it over, appointing a board, and have the board develop a set of policies associated with it. These are high-level discussion,
yeah, right,
you know, high-level considerations. We don't see any advantages yet with respect to title, which is always a concern with respect to how title works, in terms of the ability of the land bank to clear title versus the ability of a development corporation to clear title. We don't see any of those advantages as well. And then, frankly, you don't have a lot of properties in the county that outside of the city. That are blighted. So, you know, there are some advantages with respect to blighted properties, but we also have advantages with respect to blighted properties if we take them in rem as it relates to environmental liability. So you need to think about those. Those are the things that you need to think about. But the main thing is that a land bank is not a given, whereas the development corporation is a tool that you have available to you right now.
All right. Well, thank you. Is there any other discussion on this one? All right. So then we'll move on to 327, which is approving the execution of a contract amendment for $63,000 and entered into by the county, United Way of Ulster County Incorporated, Department of Employment and Training.
That's new money, right?
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And we have an abstention in Legislator Uchitel. That concludes our resolutions. And so that concludes
so
our
sorry.
Resolutions as Legislator Archer walks in. That's okay. So tonight, this afternoon, rather, sorry, we have Tim here with us. He's going to give us a presentation on some of the questions that we asked in our last committee meeting about how all the different economic development entities in the county fit together and how they work in conjunction with each other. I know that question has come up multiple times, and what the plan is for that going forward. So, it's all yours.
Yeah.
I just want you to, we have about 30 minutes.
Okay.
Just so you're aware.
I will be judicious with my use of your time. So Fawn has my presentation. I'm going to look at my own computer so I don't have to turn and look the other way. And I think, Fawn, has this been distributed yet to the members of the
no.
committee? Okay, so maybe after the meeting we can make sure we have a copy of this.
I believe the PowerPoint is actually in the on the OneDrive file for those of you that have your laptops.
So, this is following on our conversation of last meeting, really trying to unpack what is this system of economic development. We keep calling it a toolbox. I've used a couple different analogies in here, so pardon the mixed metaphor. But I think it's really trying to understand when we say that each of these pieces has its own piece, part to play, what does that mean and how do they relate to one another? So, Juan, if you could go to the second page there. Aha, look at this.
For some reason, it's not
going full screen.
It's just not.
Oh, don't. That's the thunder at the end. I don't want to give away the secret.
Sorry.
That's okay. Oh, now we know.
Now everyone knows. Yeah. That's where we're headed. The analogy that we've
chosen. That was
very
judicial.
Yeah. So the second slide there, we're building a people-centered economy. So last month, the legislature adopted the recommendations of the Ulster 2040 plan, which I think is a really big step in and of itself. Us saying that we're really working off the same playbook, and so that strategy and its future iterations, as we continue to engage with you all and with other members of the legislature and in the community to refine it and update it over time, becomes kind of the guiding structure behind all this. And ultimately, I think it's probably true. I would hope that folks agree that it's a pretty ambitious strategy, and doing the work of economic development is difficult work, and we really need a more effective economic development system if we're going to accomplish the goals that we have for economic development in the county. And that's going to require coordination and collaboration. Economic development is it's a systems approach. You know, it's working with a lot of partners, each of which is independent, and they all have to kind of be pulling in the same direction if we're going to achieve big goals about how we structure our economy, how we provide more opportunity for our residents, all that stuff. Not simple stuff, not something that I can do alone, not something that the legislature can do alone. We need all of our partners kind of pulling in the same direction. And we've learned over time that this is complicated work. So maybe, go to the next slide, Fawn. So this is kind of where things stand now, and I encounter this daily because that question mark over the head of the business person looking for help is really one that often ends up at my desk. Businesses who have a challenge or an issue that they're trying to figure out, and then they say, okay, I could use some help. I've heard there's this thing called economic development. Let me reach out and see how I can get that help. And they end up encountering kind of this alphabet soup of different agencies and funders and support mechanisms to try to help them. And I think that often that's the thing that causes them to run away screaming in frustration, that they don't know where to turn. So we work our hardest to be that single stop that businesses can come to and to help them navigate this. But I think that often it's important to note that if we're pulling in one direction and navigating one way, we may hand off to somebody who navigates in a very different way, and then the business ends up confused again and, you know, back where they started or in going in circles. So this is really the challenge that we're trying to address. And as you look at the next slide there, it's not a new challenge. This is actually taken directly from Ulster Tomorrow. For those that remember the previous economic development strategy, 2007, this was one of the major themes of that strategy, was to say, look, we've got the alphabet soup. We need to figure out a structure that streamlines that, centralizes it, and allows people to get to the various agencies and funders that they need in order to get their project done. It's proved to be really elusive, though. We've spent 10, 12, 15 years trying to bang our head against this problem. And you know, I think in some ways we've made progress, in other ways we're right where we were in 2007. And so I think my observation, and I would think that you all may have experienced this too, is that this is an enormous undertaking. What this visual diagram from 2007 represents is taking state agencies, federal agencies, local municipalities, the county, independent organizations like Ulster BOCES and our school districts, and trying to get them all operating under a single umbrella. And the term used in 2007 was a super economic development agency. And I think that's pretty appropriate. It's like you need Superman in order to get this stuff all moving in the same direction.
One of the problems with 2007 was after we did it, the economy
tanked. Yeah.
So this thing got put on a shelf and it was...
Well, but it's still, I think I would say that maybe it got put on a shelf during the crisis that immediately followed. But I remember when I joined the county, this was still something that we talked about daily. It was like, how do we get these folks all pulling in the same direction? So I think it's been the intent all along. But yeah, the players at that high level, hey, Jimmy, even some of those have changed. You can't really read the text, but there's some players like Kingston Ulster Empire Zone, like not really a tool in our toolbox anymore. And so the world has changed since then. But it still remains kind of the ultimate challenge. If we really want to serve our businesses, help them succeed in our county, we need to provide a better way to navigate all of this distributed system of supports. And so that super economic development agency was the concept. As you can see in the diagram, it had staff to be able to kind of act as navigators in this system, and they would all kind of support the end user that might be a developer or an entrepreneur or a real estate broker or a business, any of those folks. So here we are today, and I think what I would propose to you and what we've been kind of talking about in our past discussions is that we want to head towards something like that. We need to somehow streamline, centralize, realign all of these different tools to make it easier for a business to navigate, a developer to navigate, And ultimately, by the way, it's not just that direction, it's the other direction too, to make sure that it's accountable to having the outcomes. Because when you have this distributed thing and everybody's going in their separate direction, it's easy to point the finger at somebody else and say, the reason we didn't succeed is because they didn't do their job. But when we have it all working together, then it's easier to have it accountable. And so I think the first step's really the diagram on the left represents the three agencies that we collectively as a county have direct control over. So we have the County Department of Economic Development, we have the Economic Development Alliance, and we have the IDA/CRC, which are the sister organization there. And so I think instead of thinking of the 27 or 57 agencies that we need to get pulling together and starting with that as the goal, I think the goal is to start with the three that we control and figure out how we get those working more effectively together. And so the steps, I think, are really involved. Let's identify what each of these things is purpose-built to do. And so the department itself, as a department of the county, is a tool for accountability in this whole thing, to ensure that we report to you all and that you guys are able to make decisions about policy and about appropriations that keeps us moving towards the goals that we want to get to. And there's a bunch of powers that we have as a county department and roles that I think we should be playing. And so this is a mix of things that are uniquely the role of the department and things that I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, hope you would agree, these are the things we want the department doing. So ultimately responsible for the economic development outcomes. When we get this thing working together, that we're the ones reporting back to you as a committee and to the legislature saying, here's the things you charged us with and here's the results that we've been able to accomplish. It's also the ombudsperson, or the place where the buck stops. If a business is getting the runaround, we're the place that they can call, and we try to figure out what happened, what the problem is, and how to solve it. We also provide the strategic leadership, and I'll talk more about this, that helps us to steer the ship towards the goals that we establish in consultation with you all. And then, you know, we also coordinate that with all the other programs and organizations and policies that they have to ensure that it's all consistent with that strategy. We also, as county, have this unique role of being kind of in the middle between the local agencies, the municipalities, and their the town supervisors and their staff that are working sometimes with businesses, and then at the top level with the state and federal programs that often provide the funding and support, so acting as that bridge to connect the kind of on-the-ground stuff happening in our communities to the resources and supports at the state and federal level. In ways, this starts to get into kind of the proposed structure here, that what that really means is that as we're thinking about IDA projects and EDA initiatives, that we become the one that kind of puts those together, packages them, comes to you and says, here's how we think that this should work in order to accomplish our strategy, our Ulster 2040 strategy. And we report to you and advise you on that economic development strategy. Yeah.
So has the conversation with regards to that process been taken place with IDA and the EDA?
Not the review and advise and UC IDA projects, not yet. I'm proposing that, and I'll get to that in a minute and talk a little bit more about how we think that's going to work in action steps that I think we need to take next. So we have had conversations. I have a regular biweekly check-in with Rose Woodworth to check in on the status of projects and talk about those projects. We've had conversations with the leadership of the IDA about getting in front of them, talking with their board about Ulster 2040 and about their priorities and trying to align that. That, to me, is the next step coming out of this.
Critical, so, because yeah. it's one thing to put it on a piece of paper and say this is where we're headed. It's quite another to move everyone in the same page, particularly with the level of independence they have.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is around collaboration and partnership. Totally. You've got to build the trust.
Totally. I don't want to, that's totally right, but let me point out one thing. Their level of independence is really, they rely on you all. So they are your vehicle. And so the reason I'm talking now first to you guys is so that I can go to them next and have the same conversation and say, look, we've already talked to the legislature about it too. So it's a delicate dance, and I agree with you that it's important that we have this conversation directly with them. That's on our next steps. Okay, so if you could go to the next one. So here, looking at the IDA/CRC, these are kind of their powers and authorities. You know, I think you guys all know this, but this is the entity that's purpose-built for property mortgage and sales tax exemptions, also has the authority to issue bonds to qualify businesses, a mechanism for taxable or tax-exempt financing, and it generates revenues, which is important. You know, I don't want to shy away from that. There's not many tools in this toolbox that actually generate revenue other than taxpayer dollars, and so it's important to remember that. And then it has this structure, the staffing and the policies to ensure that it's consistent eventually, hopefully, with these Ulster 2040 goals. And that's, again, the conversation to have with them, understand their vision and priorities. But I think as you guys have reflected in your adoption of the Ulster 2040 recommendations, we would hope that they see that as something that they should also be pulling towards. And then the Economic Development Alliance. So this is our local development corporation. Right now it has certain programs that traditionally have been as part of that organization, such as the RLF and a lot of our grant and site assistance work that we do. It partners with other organizations, and this is really what we're trying to ramp up more of in implementing the Ulster 2040. This is where the LDC shines. It can implement special programs that we want to see as a short-term duration to accomplish a strategic goal. It doesn't have the permanence of adding staff to the county or something like that, or setting up a new department in the county. It's something that we can kind of tailor and adapt as we see a challenge and want to solve that challenge. And then it also, through the very nature of it being a 501c3 not-for-profit that is attached to the county but not the same as the county, it allows it to engage in more partnerships with local communities or local businesses or the Chamber of Commerce, that kind of thing. And it has this ability to raise additional funds. The IDA has a built-in way to generate revenue. LDCs don't have as much of that, but they can accept donations, apply for grants, all that kind of stuff, as well as earned revenue if there is a service that it can provide to either businesses or to communities. And we saw the exercise and just talked about it too with regard to housing challenges, but it can accept surplus public assets and convert them, in this case, into productive use as economic development assets. It also, we've seen this with our revolving loan fund. It can act as a pass-through for federal funds that sometimes defederalize those dollars, remove some layers of additional bureaucracy that's required if the county is the agency administering those funds. And then ultimately, all of this is really about having a tool in the toolbox that can respond quickly, that is kind of this hybrid public-private organization, public in the sense that it's appointed board members from the executive and from the legislature, but it able to adapt and move more quickly at the speed of business, which ultimately, I know that sounds cliche, but I think you can all appreciate that things move at a totally different pace in a small business that we need to be able to respond, especially we saw this during the pandemic, and so it's really important for us to have this tool in the toolbox that can respond quickly, or as quickly as we can. Okay, so all of that is set up. The best analogy I could come up with is to think of this as an orchestra. That we've got a lot of individual musicians, each have their part to play, each are well equipped to play that part, trained to play that part, but if we all go off in our own direction, we're playing in different time signatures, different keys, and it doesn't create the end result that we want, something that anyone would really want to listen to. And so, you know, I think what we're setting up here is a discussion of a structure where the Department of Economic Development takes the role of conductor, trying to guide this thing. But the conductor also doesn't operate in isolation. The conductor works off of a score that everybody has, and that score is what the legislative and the executive branch work together to set. And so in some ways, that's Ulster 2040. I recognize that you all want to have more input into future revisions and updates to 2040. We've committed to doing that, and that is the kind of co-writing of this score between the legislative and executive branch. So that's my attempt. Right now, again, we're focusing on the ones that we have direct control over so we can try to get this moving, see if this is in the right direction, see how the parties react to it, and ultimately see if we have the results that we're aiming for in terms of being able to have success towards our economic development strategy, and that is the IDA, the EDA, and the department. So with that concept in mind, the last slide, and then I'll stop and listen to feedback, is proposed steps that we could take to start moving in this direction. So the idea is that sometime in the next couple of months, by mid-September, we have some initial discussions to assure alignment with those three organizations. This has already happened to some extent with the EDA because I sit on in and participate in that board more frequently, but we need to have these discussions with the IDA. We've reached out to them, trying to work on their schedule to make sure that we have a time when we can talk with their board of directors about this as well. And really come out of that with an agreement in whatever form. And I think I've heard Herb, we talked about this once, and you were saying that we need each of them to come with their vision and then look at those visions and say, okay, how do these line up? And if we come out of that meeting feeling like any one of these three is completely out in left field playing a totally different part, we'll bring that back and we'll talk about it. And if there's a reason that that's happening, then we can figure it out from there. If it's just a matter of the fact that we've been used to operating separately and independently and we need to just start getting closer together, then I think this is how we get there. We have those conversations and start moving in that direction. And hopefully by sometime in mid-September, we'll have all those parties committed to working together to accomplish the goals of the Ulster 2040 report and their shared visions. From there, by the end of the year, we start operationalizing that. We start looking at what are the updates to the UTEP? What are the new programs that the EDA should be implementing? What are the things that the department should be doing in order to help keep this all moving in the same direction? And then, you know, this is not a done deal. We've got a bigger layer that we want to eventually incorporate, whether that's some of our educational partners, the state agencies, local municipalities. So assuming we're making progress, we refine it and we add those other players and try to help them figure out their role in the system. That's my remarks. I'll let you all react and share your thoughts, concerns,
who's playing
feedback.
The kazoo? Who's playing the kazoo?
You.
Yeah, right.
So Tim.
Yeah.
So what role do you see the legislature playing in this overall picture here? Aside from the fact that we select who are on the IDA board?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big role. That's an important one because that's an important tool in this toolbox. So there's that. I think there's also the ongoing dialogue that we have together through this committee in terms of me reporting out on progress, you asking questions and providing direction. And then there's an annual process that I think we've talked loosely about, but I think we should formalize in terms of reviewing Ulster 2040 together, saying, how has the world changed? What do we need to update so that we keep it fresh and new and appropriate? And so I think those would be the three things that immediately come to mind. IDA, regular check-ins and reporting, and then resetting strategy as an annual cycle.
The score,
yeah.
Tim's in charge here. Right?
Oh, he's in charge. Okay. Sorry. Listen, I appreciate this, yeah. And this is the first time I think we're all seeing this, and you're being very definitive on roles and responsibility, which I think has been missing.
Sure.
And I'd like an opportunity to really go over it, think about it, because what you're talking about is an organizational design.
Yep.
And just seeing it for the first time, it's a tough thing to get our arms around.
Yep.
And it's like saying, okay, you will be the point person. We've never had that conversation per se with the IDA. They have a set of guidelines and state policy that sets their direction.
Yep.
But I think that this is a great start. But I think before it goes out there to the other agencies, I think that's part of getting agreement here and giving us a chance to digest all the elements of it in a way that says, okay, this makes sense or this doesn't, how best to do this. This is your plan on how you're trying to bring it all together. I applaud that, but I do think it requires more discussion here.
Sure. Yeah, I just quick response, like completely understand that. Like this is, I wouldn't even say plan, this is kind of proposal based on the thinking that, that our team has had. And I think that the only ask I would make is that, as we continue this dialogue, that it's if there are counter proposals, that's productive.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to end up in a place where everybody just kind of digs in their position and isn't willing to talk about how to advance this. Like, counter proposals, welcome.
Yeah, but this is the first time we're seeing. Totally. We haven't even had a chance to digest it because we didn't get it in advance.
Yeah.
So that's okay. All I'm saying is, to kind of give the blessing to go forward with this action,
totally.
I feel there's a little more work that needs to be done here before we take that step, and I'll defer to the chair on this.
Yeah, and I don't think we came asking for kind of a firm response. But
well, I apologize for being late,
so if I
missed a tee up, I apologize.
No, I should have clarified that at the beginning. We're not asking for
a
resolution or something. I think just sharing with you our thinking, which, we hope to make time sometime before September to talk with the IDA board about this. So I would just encourage that maybe at next month's committee meeting, if we can have a little bit of a continued conversation about this and see if there's any thoughts that have risen up.
The way I'm looking at this really is like it's the first definitive step, right?
Yeah.
Where we have a plan, we're going to take some action, and now you got to just put all the pieces together and march forward.
I totally appreciate bringing some clarity of roles and responsibility. It's something I felt that's been missing, which creates the alphabet soup, and people don't know
Nobody
where to go and how to get anything done.
Yeah.
So, but how do you do that in a way that still allows the level of autonomy already given to each of these agencies, and then how do we work together?
Yep.
Because, 2040, even though we're still grappling with aspects of it, the fact is there is some sort of a game plan,
and
now it's around how to align everybody, and you don't do that just by dictating.
Yeah,
it has to be a collaborative conversation around
that's
where
totally
we're headed.
Right. That's so. And that's why it's hard work.
It is hard work. It's not done easily in one meeting.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's totally right.
Yeah, I just want to say, for one, to your point, Lynn, I think in all scenarios forward, whether we go forward with this or something else, in all scenarios, the work of discovery, the work of bringing everyone to the table, there's no scenario where that doesn't need to happen.
Right.
I think we can, I hope I can speak for everyone, I suspect I can, to say, like, that work of reaching out to the IDA, your work to engage with Rose and everybody else, that's you know, my blessing for sure on those conversations. To your question, Brian, about the role the legislature plays, I agree with everything that was discussed. You know, we have a unique role in all of this through appropriation on an annual cycle, right? So if we're going to look at 2040 on whatever cycle we look at it, and we're going to look at appointments to the IDA on whatever cycle we look at that, whatever it is, appropriations are still going to happen. Like, we're still going to be, UCEDA is still going to be appropriated annually through, UCEDA meaning the EDA, is still going to be appropriated annually through the legislature. And I will add to all of that that we are the only entity up here that every 2 years has to face voters, and we're the only entity up here that represents uniquely different constituent groups and uniquely different regions and uniquely different residential areas and business districts. And I think one thing that I don't think anyone would disagree with this, but I will always bring this up to center it on the conversation, is we in these conversations talk about businesses as if businesses are our constituents. Businesses are not our constituents. When you register to vote, you don't tell them where your business is located. You tell them where your house is located. And those are the people we represent. So when we have questions about whether 2040 is good, or whether we need to change it, whether something that the IDA has moved forward is good, or whether it's not good, I'm always going to look at that through the lens of whether that's good for my residents, you know, for my constituents. I think businesses are great because they help our constituents, because they hire our constituents, right? Because they help our constituents prosper. And I just think it's important that the role of the legislature is highlighted as that connection to the voters, to the residents, because at the end of the day, we're talking about businesses, but this is all about residents.
Well, if I might, that's why I think all of this builds out of a people-centered economic development strategy.
Exactly.
Like, that's where this all has to start. And I think, to your point, Lynn, this is, you know, this is hard work, because the only control we have is through a consensus around the ideas and the goals. Like, that's how you get this thing all moving in the same direction, is you get a set of goals that everybody can buy into. And I think that ultimately that has to tie back to the residents of this county. And, you know, businesses are an important player in helping our residents achieve that prosperity, but we have to stay focused on that goal.
And just to that point, Abe, great point. The score, I mean, essentially 2040 was designed specifically for the people to benefit the county. It's a plan meant specifically to essentially have economic development be a beneficial element for the people that we represent. That's why the silos, that's why the channels that we create and the planets in place.
You know, and I think it's really important, though, if you're hitting any resistance, you know, you let us know.
Yeah.
If you're hitting resistance in cooperating with, you know, 2040 or anything else that we're working on at any time, you know, we should know that.
Yeah.
Specifically the ICE and IDA.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think
one of the things that when we interviewed this committee, when we interviewed the candidates, we said, you know, one of the questions we had was, what's your ability to work with the Economic Development Department?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Because it was like almost like a litmus test for me, quite honestly, is if somebody said, well, I'm not going to work with them, but then I wasn't selecting them.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I think you know, it's certainly true that Rose and I have had regular ongoing discussions. I think the next level of that relationship has to involve, you know, consensus of the board to move in a direction that's consistent with these goals. They don't have to be beholden to them or me or, you know, the executive even. Like, that's the purpose of having a separately appointed group that's appointed by the legislature. But if we're going to accomplish the important stuff that we have in front of us, we all need to be pulling in a similar direction. And that's where that conversation, I think, anchors us in Ulster 2040 as the direction that both the executive and legislature have chosen to go. Let them express in their particular words what their vision is and how they see themselves moving in that direction. But then that gets us all going in the same general direction.
If I may, just a couple of points. One is that transactional economic development is a lot simpler than policy-driven economic development. And I think if you look in the past, what you've been facing with is essentially, well, what about this? And this is a transaction. And you've been saying yes, no to those kinds of things. Whereas, to John's point, talking about the score, the idea of looking at a policy-driven economic development. It's a lot easier for these disparate boards and other individuals that play roles, and even within the county in terms of departments and state agencies, to sort of come together on that. And that's why we do regional economic development plans, and they're updated, those kinds of things. The one thing I would say is there's been a sea change since essentially 2040 has been released with respect to the pandemic and what's happened. And it may be time to take a look and say, well, what's the new normal with respect to that, and how does that work? And the idea of having that conversation with respect to the IDA and with respect to the other entities, businesses and communities are facing whole new sets of problems, not the least of which is a housing discussion, which we have on a regular basis, but also in terms of the type of businesses that are being looked at here, and how we essentially react to that. So it may be an opportunity essentially to have that discussion around 2040 to say, this worked for us, and we're here now, and we still want to maintain ourselves as a people-centered economy, but how does that work in terms of the new, what may end up being a new normal?
And it's just constantly changing, right? Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, the pandemic is a dramatic example, but nothing stays the same. It's always changing. And, you know, I think the interesting conversation that we should prepare to have as we get towards the end of the year and start talking about next year and priorities for next year is around the workforce challenges that really do, they're the kind of intersection of the housing issues that we've been having and the economic development challenges that our businesses are facing. I've had several conversations with businesses who just immediately turn and say the problem is really housing. Like, they say it themselves, they know it. And so I think it's an interesting moment to be looking at this stuff together.
And I'll just build on that by saying economic development without workforce development is just gentrification.
Yeah, it's at best it's gentrification, it's mostly just failure.
And I know this as someone who spent years paying relocation packages.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want anyone to do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, just give you an indication, we put my father-in-law's house on the market. It will be 2 weeks Thursday. And on Zillow, they've had over 1,500 people that meet for this thing.
Wow.
In Ulster, 1,500 people. We have 4 offers within 3 days.
That's amazing.
20% overhead.
Yep.
It's ridiculous.
What's going on?
It's ridiculous.
Okay.
All right, Tim.
Thank you very much. Thanks for giving me the time.
Anyone else have any new business or old business for the committee? We have 3 minutes before John kicks us out.
Mr. Chairman, before you adjourn, several legislators came in after you voted. Just for the record, 325 was postponed. I don't know if you're casting your vote on the gold sheets or how you want to register there.
On the postponement?
Well, not on the postponement. That postponement passed and that's over with. And all the other resolutions passed unanimously. I just see them for the record when I record the vote.
Well, they can sign off on them.
They can just sign off on them.
Well, it's a little late because they already did.
Yeah, okay. That's why I just wanted to say for the record.
I thought the point of order was that the meeting was still open. We still had the option.
Yes, that's basically thank you.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, that's what I thought.
That's what I was trying to say.
Motion to adjourn by Legislator Litz.
Did everybody vote?
Okay. Yeah. Well, they're still signed. Well, does anyone else want to sign that hasn't signed?
No, they're all signed.
We're all signed. All right. Then I second. Then my second. I maintain my second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
And Fawn, you'll get us a copy of the presentation, right?
It's on the OneDrive.
Oh, it is. Great. Thank you. Thank you.